Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Thank you for listening to the show, wherever you get it. Appreciate the love and support, all your tweets, all your emails, all your five-star ratings, and your comments on the iTunes page. If you haven't done that yet, do it right now while you're listening to the intro. Go to iTunes, type in About Last Night podcast, five-star rating, click that fifth star, and leave a comment on the iTunes page. Helps us climb the charts. Man, so much cool shit going on. Mad TV premieres July 26th on the CW, 9 p.m. We've been doing table reads, starting rehearsals. It's going to be awesome. Old cast members are confirmed to come back. Can't wait. It's really going to be awesome. So make sure you have your DVR set. July 26th, CW, 9 p.m. every Tuesday, all summer long. This Wednesday, of course, Brad Williams and I will be in San Diego at the San Diego Comic Art Gallery, 7 p.m., live About Last Night podcast, interviewing the co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, podcast and a half show, dear about Kevin Eastman, the co-creator of the Ninja Turtles. We're interviewing live at the San Diego Comic Art Gallery, 7 p.m. show. Limited tickets available. Go to AdamRayTV.com and find the link for tickets on my calendar page. Today's episode is, you know what? It's great when we get guests that just happen so organically. When I did Red Rocks last year for my friend's pilot festival in Denver, the opening night was Red Rocks. They had a big concert. The John Legend headlined. Whitney Cummings did stand up. I did a little bit of time before Whitney, which was insane to perform in front of 10,000 people at Red Rocks. It was bananas. I've seen Dave Matthews Band there, and to be on that stage. I mean, the Beatles performed there. It was an insane venue. John Legend's manager, I ended up getting chummy with. We've kicked it back here in L.A. His name is Mike Jackson. He is the man. He started up Get Lifted Productions with John Legend. They've produced tons of Broadway shows, TV shows, Neil Brennan's Three Mics stand-up show that I think he's doing into a special. They also produce Underground, the slave drama on WGN. And one of the stars of that show, the star of that show, who also was on Leverage and Friday Night Lights, he played MC Ren in Straight Outta Compton. I'm talking about Aldous Hodge, baby. That's right. Aldous Hodge and Mike Jackson sat down with us and just had a really, just an awesome chat about, I mean, Jesus. First of all, the Underground, you know, the show that, as Aldous says, you know, isn't about, it's not really, you know, a slave drama per se, but more about people who are enslaved and, you know, fighting for equal rights. And they kind of go on the run, escaping their situation. It's a pretty intense and unbelievable show. It's on the WGN. They just got picked up for a second season. Definitely check it out if you just like great TV that is shot unbelievable. Every episode looks like a movie. So we get into that. We talk about Aldous's start in Los Angeles, how he designs watches. It, like, I mean, the dude is a smart and diverse individual. He talks about his State Farm commercial with LeBron experience, working and meeting Tom Cruise on Jack Reacher, which brought up just a great point about, you know, working with big stars like that and how unpredictable that situation can be. But he said Tom Cruise was the man, which he'll get into. And Mike Jackson shares amazing insights into the producer world, meeting how he met John Legend and started that relationship. It's a great episode. A little over an hour. The guys are great, and hopefully this leads to a John Legend ALN appearance, which is what we're working on. But enjoy this episode, and follow Aldous Hodge on Twitter, at Aldous Hodge. Be on the lookout for season two of Underground. Follow me on Twitter, at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad on Twitter, at Funny Brad. At ALN Podcast on Twitter, at ALN Podcast on Instagram. Adam Ray 33, Brad Williams Comic on Instagram. Tour dates coming up. I'm local. As I said, Mad TV, we start shooting next week. So I'm in town, AdamRayTV.com for all my tour dates. Laugh Factory, Comedy Store, Improv this week. So go to AdamRayTV.com, check out where I am, come see me. Of course, this Wednesday, one more time, San Diego Comic Art Gallery, 7 p.m., live ALN show, interviewing co-creator of Ninja Turtles, Kevin Eastman. Get your tickets at AdamRayTV.com. Brad Williams, after the San Diego show, will be in, where's Brad going to be? Oh, shit. Brad is home for the next couple weeks. Oh, and then he goes to Montreal. That's right. Brad goes to Montreal soon, but I think he's home. His next date's July 14th through the 17th at the Columbus Funny Bone in Columbus, Ohio. July 14th through the 17th, Funny Bone, Columbus, Ohio. Brad Williams. Get your tickets at funnybone.com. At storymerchandise.com for all the ALN merch, t-shirts, mugs, hats, posters on the way. Go to storymerchandise.com to get all your ALN merch. Bring it to the shows. Sign it. We'll sign it. You sign your own shit and bring it to the show, and we'll take a picture with your name on your shirt. And you know, maybe you could be the podcast being one of their stops, but it's going to have to be pushed a little bit because, hey, man, movie star schedules, they get crazy. Working on some more Ghostbuster cast members, Wayne Brady. So many good apps. So subscribe on iTunes. Make sure you have it downloaded on your phone, your Android, Stitcher, aboutlastnightpodcast.com for all past and present episodes. Now that we got the tour dates out of the way, those are the Twitter handles. That's all the merch info. And now sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Mike Jackson and Aldous Hodge.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. It's about last night.
I'm sorry I was eavesdropping on your conversation, but when you hear stuff like, did we hear from Will and Jada's people? And you're like, we got the phone call from them. Fresh Prince 2, Electric Boogaloo is back on.
So you saw on the train. I like that.
You saw what we saw.
Yeah. You're like, all right, can I get like the Carlton role, like his son, something like that.
Yeah.
That's just conversations that I hope I have one day in this business.
Be careful what you wish for, man.
Oh, really?
Be careful what you wish for.
I've heard that a million times of just, not to quote Biggie or nothing, but mo money, mo problems. But, when you get to that level, why is it more stressful? Like, what? Like, why do you say be careful what you wish for?
Because you're no longer a human being at that point.
You're just like an opportunity.
A product.
Yeah.
You're an actor or a producer or a writer or director. Yeah. The more success you have, the more public your projects are, and by proxy you become, the more of a target you become.
Ooh, like, okay. Literally everywhere you walk, everybody's like, oh, you're a walking bank. Yeah. What can I get from you today?
Yeah.
You know how many charities bank ask for money?
Yeah.
Yeah. How can you help us buy more hot tubs?
Yeah.
That, and like, they're so, like, in talking about the charities, they're so good.
You want to say yes to everyone.
I opened my mail and I got one from the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, and they have these kids on the cover, and you're just like,
I want to help the children.
How do I say no to cystic? Like, I don't want that. And then I don't want that moment, like, kind of like the Coke ad where you see the Indian with the one tear, to where like I turn down. I'm like, I just throw the cystic fibrosis ad like in the recycling, and then and I look up, there's a kid like staring at me like, that was for my iPad. I'm like, oh, fuck. Fuck.
I just think I'm gonna catch everything I don't support.
Yeah.
It's like bad karma.
Yeah, for sure. That's why I don't really donate to dwarfism causes, because I'm like, got that already. Yeah. I'm good.
I'm there. You guys didn't help me out, so. I caught it.
I caught it. You're right. I used to be 6'4". Yeah. I had like a contract with the NBA, and all of a sudden, someone coughed on me, and then I'm mortal. And now
I was curious how you could get it. It's just a single cough.
Yeah, it's just a single cough. Yeah. I mean, but it's like it has to be one of those Derek Zoolander coughs, like the. If you ever hear that, that's a dwarfism cough. Oh my god, it's now, contagious.
Is there?
You know, you catch it the same way you catch black or you catch gay.
God.
Stay away.
God is not the answer.
God makes things contagious at a very early age.
God bless.
Could there ever be any dwarfs in season 2 of Underground? Or is that...
We love if they're white, yeah.
Yeah.
We just love killing white people. We'll kill a dwarf.
We'll kill everybody.
There's something about that. Why does that make me excited? There's something.
Ride them apart.
Like, yeah, there's something about being.
There's something in you that you need to fix.
Yeah.
You need a hug.
Yeah. And not being the slave owner part. That part doesn't excite me. Let's just be perfectly clear. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not like.
Are
it's
you
all,
sure?
Yeah.
Are you sure? Your
it's
eyes all, got real
big.
It's
always been my dream. That's what, like, they asked for my Make-A-Wish. I was like, well, it's kind of complicated, but.
Can you imagine if somebody asked for that? I want to meet Jim Carrey and be a slave owner.
You're like, what? Yeah. But yeah, there's I've always wanted to die in, like, a movie or
totally.
A TV show.
Something
like,
dramatic.
Like, yeah. Just always wanted that. Like, hell.
Well, we can help you out with that.
Yes.
You know. Yes, we can.
All
we can
right. And I mean, and it doesn't even have to be like because I'm a dwarf slave owner, it could be like you drown me in a puddle. Like, it doesn't have to be crazy.
No. If you die on your show, our show, it's going to die. You're going to die in an exciting way. Nobody exciting. Goes out like a punk.
No.
Nobody.
And that's
no
the thing.
Puddle diving.
No. Yeah. You sound like the guy at my park. Hey, no puddle diving, midget. Ah, damn it. Okay. But you're right when you say no one goes out quietly because this show Underground, like, it's a what's that?
Oh, yeah? No, I'm looking for something cool for you guys.
Oh, great.
Okay.
Hopefully, if I can
He's
find
not,
it.
Not paying attention.
No, I'm listening. Yeah. I'm okay. listening. It, okay. it all ties.
That's when okay. he talks to me, he literally does. Yeah,
gotcha. Yeah. But like, what I was saying, like, you got, like, this show is a thriller.
Absolutely.
It's not. Like, because when you think of shows and movies that are from this era and this time, slave shows, okay, then it's always like a period piece where it's like an examination of the time and like a human struggle and it's as a white person, it really hurts to watch because you're like, we were so bad. Oh, this was horrible.
Yeah, white guilt.
Yeah, just oh,
I watched
just
12 Years a Slave High with a guy I just met, another comedian.
I don't think that works.
We were checking in with each other the whole time, like, oh, this was a bad idea.
That's not good. that's a billboard that says
it's from Aldous's phone.
It says "Make America White Again."
Oh, apparently, God. I think somebody's running in Tennessee or something like that, and that's what they're leading with.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Like
so, I mean, to kind of segue from that to where the show is, where we are on the show is
Rick
not.
Rick Tyler's his name.
Yeah, Rick Tyler.
Okay, so, hey, Rick Tyler, how about a fuck you for the About Last Night podcast?
Fuck Rick Tyler. Let's
I'm like, was
no,
America
kidding.
Ever white?
Ever. Because
when
Native
y'all
colored.
Got here, they were a little tan.
Yeah.
little flavor upon your arrival, Rick.
It's just weird how much that correlates to what's happening today, and that speaks to where the difference is, I think, in the execution.
Yeah.
It's because you can understand. It resonates. Mm-hmm. And you connect with it. Plus, I mean, like you said, it is exciting because we finally threw that sexy kind of action-packed, you know, twang on it.
Yeah, like, it's like the same way, like, 24 was always like, oh, what's happening next? That's what this show is, and you're always like, oh, like it's a thriller,
it's a thriller
and I just haven't seen that from this genre. And
they always live on the plantation, right?
Right.
They never really get off.
Yeah.
So
and you guys are you like I think like 75% of the show is running.
Yeah,
bro.
Where do you guys shoot? You live in the swamp.
Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I can't tell you how beat up my knees were because you're sitting in there running in woods and we're in those real authentic slave shoes. First of all, it's pretty much the equivalent of paper because, you know, 2-3 days out there in the woods and the rubble and all that,
they're
your
gone.
Shoes, the sole starts coming off.
And I got to tell you, though, as a producer on the show, it's really tough for me when I have to watch them running through the swamps.
Kiss my ass.
Sitting there
you're
with
like,
my Fresca,
my iced latte.
Sorry, I missed that shot. I was too busy counting money. Go run back in the swamp, waist high. Yeah, can we make it shoulder high? Can we make the swamp deeper?
Do it one more time because I wasn't feeling that one.
Now, as a producer, when you're like picking locations for like swamps, are there other swamps that were or areas that were being looked at for?
Yeah, Mike, how the hell does that work?
So I'm going to pass that over to our creators, Joe Pekaski, and our director, and Anthony Hemingway in multiple episodes. So they are the ones that kind of lead the creative vision and execution on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. We're just there to kind of look pretty. And,
yeah.
I don't see you taking no responsibility, Mike.
Yeah, I'm not going to take responsibility.
I don't see you standing up, Mike.
I'm not. Well, we got you out of Louisiana for season 2, so that's something.
Okay.
Oh, what?
Okay.
We're not shooting back. We were in Baton Rouge for the first season. Yeah. We're not Baton Rouge for the second.
What are you guys going to shoot?
Can we say? I don't know.
A soundstage in Burbank?
Yes.
It's all green screen.
Have you heard of Bel Air?
That's why we were on the phone with Will and Jada's people.
Exactly. Because
they got the soundstage.
Will's doing a cameo.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And Will knows all about Bel Air.
He's going to kill Brad. Yeah. Dump him in the pond.
Done. Done.
What I dig that I think I heard in some interview was where, Aldis, you were saying that it wasn't a slave drama, but it was a show about people that were enslaved that were fighting for better rights. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a difference.
Like for people who haven't seen the show, which.
Well, fuck them.
Fuck them, first of all.
Yeah, everybody should have seen the show
for sure.
It is on, I mean, it's on a massive.
It's,
network.
Yeah. And it's on, and I looked it up on Rotten Tomatoes because Rotten Tomatoes does TV now. Yeah. And you guys are at 95%.
Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah.
95%.
Love y'all.
With all due respect and humility, it's a really good show.
It's an incredible show. Yeah. How did it even come to be? Misha, I mean, I speak to that much.
Misha Green, who's one of the co-creators,
literally
was hanging out with her sister trying to figure out what's next.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And her sister was like, you know, you should do a show about the Underground Railroad. And her response was, Underground would be a really cool title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she just started doing research.
It does pop.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much a title can immediately just make you go, oh, you should check that out.
It's just cool, man. Yeah. It's like everybody wants to be a part of something underground.
Yeah.
You know
what I mean? The more research you start doing about the time and like the process of the Underground Railroad, the more intriguing it becomes. And the more you realize you don't know shit about the Underground Railroad.
I was going to say, how much did you know prior
to
doing it?
We always say, you know, a paragraph in the history book and Harriet Tubman, who's a hero of ours clearly, but there's thousands of Harriet Tubmans that helped the movement.
I'll tell you, as a black American who is almost 30, it was embarrassing to realize how much I didn't know.
Yeah.
Granted, growing up, when you search for it, it's not easily accessible. You know, it's not laid out there for you because these people are not painted as heroes. And sometimes their entire history and existence is destroyed and erased because it sort of paints shame on the foundation of America.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's what's real.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's what was happening.
It was the first integrated civil rights movement in American history.
And that's where you find the pride.
Fact. Yeah.
You know? I mean, going back to what you were saying, like, it's kind of hard to watch, you know, you see, yes, there are white people who are doing bad things, but then you also have this group of white people who are raising up, and that's a part of the story that
many
people don't talk about.
Right.
And it's like, yo, give them their credit.
That's so fucked up. I mean? Yeah, why is that? Is it just...
Well, think about it. It's Americans defeating Americans.
Yeah.
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 Americans, multicultural collection of Americans defeating white Americans in power.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
They don't want that.
Yeah.
And these and these people that you're talking about, they did help. They had stops on their property, and they faced real consequences if they were found out. So that's the thing about the show is kind of everyone's at risk, whether it be the runaway slaves, obviously they're at risk, the abolitionists, even the people that are chasing them. It's like they're at risk too. I mean, don't get me wrong. We want them to go to hell and you die, but at the same
time, yours.
Come on, Chris Chase.
Maloney. Chase. But yeah, there's never that. Rather than maybe a couple sweet moments with the love interests and the love stories, but there's never like that time in the show where you can just go, okay, everything's okay.
Yeah.
Okay, everything's fine.
But I think that speaks to how compelling it is, right?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of season one, you can take a break.
Yeah, you take a little breather.
Yeah.
Then you can pause.
Actually, not really. I mean, at the end of the season, when it seems like everybody had a heart attack because they had to wait so long for it to come back again, which is a great thing.
Yeah.
They're like, 2017? Why?
I'm like, usually that's what happens when a series goes off. You wait till the next year.
Yeah.
Have you heard of Entourage?
It's like
2 years.
Game of Thrones is like just about to end. It's not coming back in like 2 months.
Right.
Like,
it's going to take a little hiatus.
There's some time. And especially the way you guys shoot this, like, this is not your cheesy TV show that you're like, okay, they made that in a, like, it's not a formula to where you can plug any sort of storyline in.
Yeah.
It's like, you're making movies. Like, you're making little mini movies every time in terms of the cinematography, some of the ways that you guys are, like...
That opening shot.
Yeah. Oh, dude. Gorgeous.
You know what, sir?
I
respect you for that.
Oh, thank you.
Respect you.
Thank you. Well, I mean, like, I watched some of the episodes, and I'm like, oh, wow, this is... Like, they're not slacking on any part.
No.
And you talk about that opening shot, that set the tone, because in addition to this incredible camera angle and the running and you panting,
yeah,
and you're breathing hard
to the breathing,
yeah,
song,
yeah,
and then you're going with Kanye West, Black Skinhead, that beat playing,
such a cheap song, The License.
Really? Oh, no. Okay. This is me not knowing the business, yeah, going, yeah. Oh, you did? Wow. Really? That just cost like $100? They just gave it to you?
It was just five episodes.
A Starbucks gift card. That's all it took.
Kanye really likes his cappuccinos.
Yeah. He did it for charity. It was charity.
He's a really giving guy.
Yeah.
We had Legend give him a call. So.
Well, that's got to help having John Legend, who's a producer on the show. And he's like mostly doing like,
John's my producing partner.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We have a company called Get Lifted Film Co. John, myself, and a woman named Ty Stoklorius. Mm-hmm. And we are traditional TV and film producers.
Okay.
In addition to producing and developing content for both TV, film, and stage.
Yeah, this wasn't your first show.
No.
Yeah.
But when you have John Legend, you're going to
get the doors open.
You're going to dip your toe in the music side of it.
Absolutely.
And we're not crazy. We know that our strength coming into the project was what we brought musically. And we feel like we did a pretty good job of that.
It adds
like,
so guys, much.
The music is very important. What do you think you can do about that?
Yeah. We're like, and go.
Yeah.
You know, the music is great. And one of the great things about the music and opening with Kanye and having, you know, The Weeknd and John even and all these great mm-hmm. artists, even some emerging artists, is, and we often say this as well, it made it contemporary. It kind of took it off. Like, it didn't make it feel like a history lesson.
Is that what you're
right? But between the thriller aspect of it and what Joe and Misha did, marrying that with the music, it really brings in a younger audience that doesn't feel like
isn't
forcing something.
You hear, because like, if you see certain films and movies made about this time, like you say, you feel very separated from it, and it feels like another time, another era, something we don't necessarily have to think about now. But then you like, when you start with that music, it just links it, and you
brings
go like,
you right.
And it goes like, oh, okay, they're doing this from this perspective now, and in a way that has not been done before.
Yeah, I mean, music is subliminally very, very important, because it's one of those things that people take for granted in terms of it setting the tone, setting the pace, and there's an entire generation watching our show that doesn't even have a clue about this time frame, this history,
absolutely.
But they know this music,
right?
You know, and you know, when you hear something familiar, you automatically find something to connect that's familiar, and then you lock in. So the next time you go somewhere, you start hearing that music, guess what you're thinking about? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then it allows you to find some way to rationalize what's happening on the screen.
Yeah. Now, when you're running, do you know that that song's going to be used? Or like, hey, just, oh, really?
It was written to
it was written in there.
That's that has to act.
That's amazing.
That has
it wasn't
to help
John Legend's
a lot.
Musical genius to come up with that one,
right? Like,
it was actually written in the script.
Yeah, and that has to help a lot to know, like, okay, like, because then you know the kind of intensity that music is bringing to the scene that you can then translate into your performance. Because like, if you're running and breathing as hard as you are, and they got like For Release playing in the background, you're like, all right, well, maybe
like it's not
the same.
It's not gonna happen, guys.
By the way, drink five for your first For Release reference on the Bout Last Night podcast.
Wait, now, do you?
I'm cultured.
Do you like listen to the song before that scene, or like how do you prep for a scene like that?
No. I mean, for me, the scene is about the scene, the honesty of it, regardless. Mm-hmm. So whatever song is playing, I'm gonna do my thing, and then, you know, hopefully it marries.
Yeah.
It is nice knowing where what music is gonna be there. However, it is still a test. We have to figure out, does it work?
Yeah.
Because for a lot of people, when they first start watching the show and they hear that song first and they see, they're like, I wasn't sure how I felt about it at first, but then you know what? It kind of works. And it's like, yeah, it does. You know, and you got to give it a chance. So it's really testing a lot of things out. We don't know what's going to stick.
Mm-hmm.
And we just got lucky in that it all stuck.
Yeah. We got our first nomination today.
Yeah. TCA nomination.
Whoa. What for?
Best new show by the TCAs, the
Critics
Association, which is a big,
it's a huge deal.
That's huge big, deal. Big,
that's
big
awesome,
business.
Man.
Yeah.
So
it's nice when you get that, like, in the support of your peers, and that to kind of just sort of cement what you guys have known in that you,
especially the critics.
Yeah. Right.
What is more important to you, that your peers respect what you're doing or the critics? I mean, obviously there's different value in each
assessment. I don't really care about what anybody thinks.
I don't read any YouTube comments.
I think it's too false.
Has too many bracelets. You're like, fuck that motherfucker. Yeah,
I'll choke you with my bracelets.
Nine is a totally acceptable number.
It is. You counted. No, I think it's twofold. I mean, they're equally important. Granted, I do not give a lot of attention or energy to what is said or how it's being said because that deflects me from doing my job.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. However, it's nice to have critics behind you because critical review can kind of substantiate the lifespan of your show.
Totally.
You know?
Sure. And make or break it in some cases.
Exactly. And then when you have the love from people, that genuine love from people, you know that you've done your job well enough to actually engage the audience. So you are, it's sort of testing ground to see how effective you are at what you're doing.
Right.
And if what you are doing, if it matters, it will show and how people respond, you know?
And this is the kind of topic where I imagine the fan response from this, the people who watch this show have got to, like, their appreciation for the source material and what you guys are doing has got to be really high. Like, you have to have some crazy,
I'll tell you this,
thankful fans.
Right now, Ancestry.com should be paying us because I talk to so many people on a regular basis who are like, I start watching the show and then I did my own family research. And did you know my great great grandma, she was on the Underground Railroad. Holy my great granddad, I'm like, okay, cool. But when you hear it enough times, you're like, yo, I need to hit up Ancestry real quick.
Yeah.
You know, because obviously we're hitting y'all with the plugs.
Yeah, right.
You know,
seriously.
Kick me back a couple percentage, maybe a couple points on the back.
You know, that only goes to the producers, right?
That scares me because my mom's family's from Georgia and I don't necessarily know if I want to go to
I would stay away from
we have to cut this interview short.
Could be bad.
I'm never wearing again.
Yeah, for freedom.
I'm not wearing cotton again ever. Don't ask me why.
We wear cotton, but we don't pick it anymore.
Well, oh god. I mean, if that's not the tagline,
we wear cotton, but we don't pick it.
You grew up in North Carolina, yeah?
I was born in North Carolina.
Okay. Yeah. Where'd you go to acting school at?
I didn't go to acting school, man. I got the chops in the rough way, man. I was started in New York and, you know, did like print and commercials and extra work as a kid and just kind of graduated from there. My brother and I ended up on...
Your brother's an actor.
Yeah, he's actually shooting his show right now in North Carolina called Six. It's on History Channel. I think it debuts July 18th. But nice.
Their mom stays smiling, man.
Yeah, I
was gonna say,
and their baby sister just graduated.
Yeah, she graduated from UCLA at 19. She did it in 3 years.
What?
Which means she started at 16.
Right. Wait, so it took
Brad 3.5 years to graduate from USC, and he didn't even graduate.
No, I didn't graduate. I just went.
You're like, I'm here. Here it is.
Then someone gave me a microphone and said, say jokes into this. And I was like, well, that's way better than going to science class.
Yeah.
That's a lot of
fun.
That's
amazing.
Now, is your sister going into acting as well?
She started off in neuroscience for her first two and a half years, and then she graduated out of a degree in anthropology. So,
and she graduated early.
Yeah.
Oh my god!
So she's kind of
proud.
Smart.
Proud parents.
Very much so.
And you got military parents, correct?
Yeah. Both my mom and my father were Marines. They are Marines. Once a Marine, always a Marine.
Always.
But they met in Okinawa on duty. And
I've been to that base.
Yeah, have you?
Yeah, I did. I did some stand up over there. Yeah, man. And there's a lot of that going on between Marines because you see on the base and what's outside of that Okinawa, it's like, nah, you're just gonna be hanging out at that base.
Yeah.
Like, there's not a lot. Like, you go out and get a really cheaply made T-shirt, but that's about it. That's the only thing outside of those walls.
Yeah.
So it's not Tokyo. It's not that.
There's no Dave and Buster's nearby.
It's very, very simple. Well, it's the simple life. It's a humble, simple life.
What's it like growing up in a Marine household?
I was a single parent household. So my mom was very, very strict.
Yeah.
Indulgent.
Yeah.
And my brother and we had a great childhood, but, you know, education was key. So through the summer vacation, everybody's out in the streets playing, you know, games and all that. We had to earn that because we were still inside doing school. But we also had other things that were priorities. We were still in the business. We both started at 3 years old. I think I started around like 2 or something like that. So that's always been in the family. We had to earn it. my brother and I, we started college. I was 14. He was 15. So we always had to make sure that, you know, regardless of acting, we had the education to take care of the contracts, take care of whatever else we wanted to do. And even right now, we're diversified, small cap venture capitalists. We're invested in a few different things. I myself am a micromechanical engineer. I make watches. So like mom said, education is
let me stop
him.
He makes $100,000 watches.
What?
Let's
okay.
Let's put a pin in that.
Design.
Forget what? The part in the show. Can you give me a watch? Fuck that.
Holy shit.
My God.
No, I mean I've been in the game for a minute.
So it was your reward to kind of do the acting stuff, but after you completed like your educational like
yeah, I mean
duties.
You know, education was the priority, acting was the privilege.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you enjoyed it as a kid?
We wanted to do it. Well, I mean, definitely I enjoyed it, but it's one of those things where a lot of kids are pushed into it because of somebody else's ambitions. But us, you know, it's like kids who want to play sports. You know, if you go out there, you win that game, that's cool. If you have a bad day, you can't quit.
Yeah.
So for us playing the game with the entertainment, she was like, if you want to do it, but you got to earn it. You got to work at it. And you're not going to quit just because you don't like it, because you had a bad day. So
what
you
a great
have
attitude.
To earn it, you know?
What and, a great attitude that she instilled with you with that.
Mom's is a beast, man. Awesome.
No kidding. And based on what you've described your brother and your sister doing, obviously she was she was good at what she did.
Jesus. I mean, we doing
I just make $100,000 watches, whatever, in my spare time.
I'm that's a whole different endeavor. I mean, I go into production for my own brand. I was an independent designer for a while, so designing for other companies. But I go into my own production in a few months, and it's a process.
Dude,
we don't have enough time
between.
To talk
this
about
dude
it.
Literally stays with his like his sketch pad.
I almost brought it up.
Like,
it's
I'm
in the car.
Shocked he doesn't have it right.
Yeah.
Now.
Wow.
No, I almost brought it up.
What's in it? What are you just constantly designing?
All of my inventions, innovations, my theories, and watch designs.
And, how do you even develop a passion or like a you recognize that that's like something you can do?
Well, I've always had a passion for art. I've been a painter since yay high. I started interning at an architecture firm from 13 to 15 years old. By the time I was at my last college when I was like 18, I was at Art Center College of Design, and I was there for product design. So I just, you know, picked up watches, but I've always known that I want a company.
Just picked up watches.
Well, I mean,
I literally picked up a watch.
I want to make. Like, I picked up handball. That's what I just picked up. I wasn't
like
even that good at it.
Pong,
well, see, look, I was a nerd, super nerd. I still am. Girls were late in the game for me. Like my first girlfriend, I think, was like 18 years old. You know what I'm saying? So, and let's not even talk about, you know, all the rest that comes with it.
Yeah.
I was a little late in the game.
It's like, I don't want to get into details, but let's just say, when I was in Straight Outta Compton, a breakthrough happened.
Exactly.
A few people noticed.
A few people had fun. So, I mean, it was that. There was the fact that I was very introverted. There was the fact that, you know, I wasn't big in sports. Well, I'll say this. I wasn't big on recreational sports. I was a fighter growing up. Since I was 6 years old, I've been a martial artist. So for me, that was my sport. But basketball,
dude,
football,
screw
all
the
that.
Dos Equis guy. You're the most interesting man in the world. Fuck
Jesus
this. And I know, like, you also play instruments? Like, you what?
No. Play is a very strong word. Practice. People keep saying play, and it's like, yo, don't put your boy out there like that. I do. I have a passion for violin that I picked up for – I've had it for a few years. But I just have very little time to practice these things.
Well, right.
Well, when you're designing watches and martial art and acting, do you have a second dick? What do you not? Jesus Christ.
I got three dicks. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. He's so far ahead of the game.
That's such a three dick thing to say. Don't worry.
I got three dicks.
You keep to your word and figure that out.
Now I'm really impressed on how you're running in the show. Because how the fuck are you doing that with three dicks?
You know, it's just, you know, you tuck and go. You know, it's kind of hard. You know, you got, you know, you got 10 inches, 11 inches, and 12 and a half, but it's like, it's whatever.
You have my height and dick. That's depressing. I don't even have that.
By the way, my height and dick is for sure your memoir. The title of your next.
Absolutely. I'm going to get Mitch Albom to write it instead of Tuesdays with Maury. It's going to be my height with dick.
That's incredible.
Dude, that's incredible. That all the stuff that you were involved in and like, I don't want people to think that you sort of broke through with acting with Straight Outta Compton Underground. Like, your IMDb page, bro.
Yeah, so long.
Like, it's you've been doing this. Like, all right, here's something to give people an idea. you've been in two Die Hard movies and played two different roles.
What the fuck?
Here's what's even crazier. And one of them, I think the span is like 15 years apart.
Yeah, because you were in Die Hard with a Vengeance
when I was like, I was like eight or something like that.
Yeah.
And then the next one was, it's longer than 15 years.
Yeah, then was the most recent one, like A Good Day to Die Hard.
Yeah, I was like 24, 25.
Yeah.
It's been a minute, man. It's weird. Like, people ask me what my breakthrough role is, and a lot of people assume it's Compton because it was really high profile.
Yeah.
But
I've
been in this business so long. With respect to Compton, it was fantastic. However, I don't really believe in the breakthrough. I believe in great steps.
Yeah.
You know, Leverage for me, I did Leverage on TNT for 5 years, and that really established my audience, which came and followed me to Compton. So,
right.
You know, everything is a step that attributes to your future. That's why you have to be careful with whatever job you take, especially in this business, because you are the vehicle for you're the vehicle driving your career, and you have to know where it is you want to go.
Yeah.
So I got the script for you.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay.
Thank you.
Cool.
Can I get that inscribed on a watch? The vehicle for your career.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah,
Leverage is what, like, the first real consistent gig, right? Where you're like on TV, in people's households.
I mean, everything before that was just knocking out job after job, maybe a couple of recurrings here and there. And before that, I had a really great time knocking out a great recurring role on Friday Night Lights. Yeah, but Leverage was my home.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm eternally grateful for that, because there's still people watching it today like, hey, where's the next season? I'm like, bro, we stopped filming in 2012.
Wow.
You know,
I got straight out of Compton money now.
Isn't that great how, like, fans, like, there are people, there's just so much content to consume and, like, the ways to get it. And people, will check this podcast. Like, a lot of people listen to the podcast, like, the day it comes out. But then people.
This podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, you guys have an audience.
Yeah. We got, like,
it's
all dwarfs.
And his two dicks.
Three, sir.
Well, 10, 11, 12 and a half.
I need you to get it right. Yeah. Put some respect on my name.
Yeah. One of the dicks isn't a fan. He just listens to Marin.
He's a Marin guy.
My 10-inch dick is really upset right now.
It's upset.
Normally the biggest draw in the room.
My 10-inch dick. That sounds like a really weird sitcom in the 80s. Tuesdays after Small Wonder, it's my 10-inch dick.
Very progressive show.
Sure.
It's multicam.
Yes. Where does the State Farm LeBron commercial fall in there?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, dude.
Wow.
I feel like, dude, looking back, that might be that was pre-Leverage.
You're a LeBron commercial?
Yeah, it was years ago. Actually, that was during Leverage. I think we were shooting season one or two. So it was right before Leverage really kind of got its foundation.
You're a big dude next to LeBron. I mean, you look like Brad.
Yeah, no, LeBron is biggish.
Someone got shot at the Cavs parade.
What?
Wow, you
serious? I just saw on my phone, literally sitting here.
Come on, man.
Come on, Cleveland.
You had
Don't go off Philadelphia.
No, you had the worst thing that was going on was that you all jumped on a fire truck. Right. I mean, come on. That had people in L.A. going, wow.
I'm from Philly, so I was very proud of the fire, you know, driving down Broad Street.
That was.
What was that?
Can LeBron stage a filibuster real quick to get it? Can the NRA listen to LeBron
effectively stage a filibuster?
Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe.
Hopefully, fingers crossed.
There were 42 gun-related deaths during the filibuster, during the 14-15 hour.
Guns aren't a problem though.
People kill people.
With what, motherfucker? With what? With one of my three dicks, maybe.
Exactly.
Boom.
I kind of want to go back to what Chris Rock said. Like, can we charge like $1,000 a bullet? You'll never have another death, another gun related.
So
people will be throwing the gun at you, not the bullet.
I would kill you if I could afford it.
Yeah.
I'm going to push this bullet through you and get it back.
Wait, so how was it doing a LeBron commercial when you're a Warriors fan?
Well, see, back then I was a Boston fan, but everybody left the team.
Yeah,
when Doc leaves the team, you're like, come on, everybody's literally everybody's gone.
Because people want to come to play with Doc still after you.
Yeah, I'm like, come on, like, come on, Doc.
Yeah, and you saw Rondo, and you saw a couple of people at the time.
In LA or Boston?
Would you rather live in LA or Boston?
I mean,
you're talking about Doc.
L.A.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, L.A.
There you go. But it was weird because, like, I mean, I definitely got respect for LeBron, got respect for his game. I mean, the boy's a beast, as you can see. But everybody's like, oh, my God, you're doing this, you know, this commercial with LeBron. How is it? Like, how is it meeting him and this and that?
Yeah.
Da, 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 da.
Supposed to be best friends.
I'm like,
I mean, you know, it's cool meeting him, but you know, it's like I'm at work.
Yeah.
This is my coworker.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I see it like that.
You're not,
you know, because
you're not like hitting up LeBron in between takes, like, hey, so you know, like there's this really cool skee ball place, like, no, like right down the road.
No, we work together. You know what I'm saying? Much respect. I mean, do your thing. Yeah, you know, but I'm not jumping on the because. It's a job.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Do you ever look, are there ever like on any sort of set, and this is, you know, probably good advice for anyone who's getting into the business. Like, do you welcome an opportunity?
Do I have a fangirl out with,
well, like, if there is a moment, like if LeBron, do you wait for LeBron to talk to you before you go like, oh, cool. Like we can shoot the shit.
Or
do
I talk to anybody.
Yeah.
Cause it's the confidence I have in myself. I mean, look, if I am in the same space as you are, obviously I am of the same caliber as you.
Yep.
You know, we are working in the same space. I've earned my place here. So I give respect, but I've learned to hold myself with much respect because there's so many times where you'll be on a set and a lot of people around you treat you like nothing because they're looking at this person over here, that person.
Yeah.
And it's really debilitating. You know, as an entertainer, you're trying to figure out where is my value? But you got to command it by owning it and being that yourself. And I look at you, hey, you've accomplished X, Y, and Z, but honestly, I've accomplished great things. I will continue to accomplish great things. None of that matters. All that matters is that we're both here in this space and we're equals. I never let anybody make me feel less than, you know?
So then when you were shooting Jack Reacher 2, and Tom Cruise walks on set, are you like, you know what? I'm going to stand right next to Tom. Like, fuck it.
Well, here's the thing about Tom, though.
Okay.
He makes you feel comfortable automatically.
Oh, okay.
That's big time.
He comes up to like, he'll run up on the extras and be, hey, how you doing, Tom? What's, you know, he'll run up on the security guard. How's your day? You good? You know what I mean? And you know, you need anything? You're cool. And you're like, this is Tom Cruise. Yeah.
he must be aware of his,
well, he
presence,
is.
So he wants to make people feel comfortable immediately.
Yeah, he is. Cause honestly, that is a different experience. You know, you're like, ah, crap. It's like, this is Tom.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
you can't get this around that.
You know, it's big. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But,
and it's got to be in a weird situation where you're of that celebrity where you know, and I think even like when they asked, like the NBA players didn't wear suits all the time until Michael Jordan wore suits all the time. And they asked him, like, dude, why are you wearing suits and not showing up in jeans and a t-shirt like all the other guys? He goes,
I'm going to work.
Because every day is somebody's first day meeting Michael Jordan.
Ah.
So he was aware of like what he meant to people. So that's got to be interesting to where you're Tom Cruise and you go, wow, if I say hi to this extra,
right,
that's going to be their story that they tell for years.
Exactly.
It's like, I was on this movie and Tom Cruise said hi to me.
And Tom wore a tuxedo every single day.
And, damn.
No.
And he rode a motorcycle and then stopped 4 miles off a set and then ran full speed.
No, I'm kidding. No, I think he is very aware of it. And think more than looking internally and saying this is what I am to people, you know, he's working also not as just the actor but also as the producer. And what I kind of learned from just watching how he worked, you know, he needs his team to perform well. So in order to get the best performance out of your team, whether it's crew, whether it's staff, whether it's your actors, you got to give people respect. And that's what a lot of people miss the mark on. They think it's about them when they're on the set, when it's not.
So they isolate themselves.
You're on a team.
They're just like, this movie's about me. I'm the star, so everybody should come to me.
We get it. You're here, but there are other people too. How does this work with just you? You know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he really understands the environment and that everybody needs to feel respected, and there needs to be sort of this even level of civility in order for people to do their jobs adequately.
Yeah.
You know, I can relate to that with stand-up because it's like, you know, when we're both on the road and we'll go to a club for a weekend and headline, it's like I make a point to get to, like, be friendly with the staff and, like, the owner and just everybody so that, like, I can feel comfortable to do my job because I'm like, oh, if everybody, like, knows that I'm, like, you know, fun and cool and they want to, like, they'll want to work harder at their job, like, whether, you know, it's managing a heckler or just, like, making it, like, a collective experience. And so that's...
And they, shouldn't that be in life?
Just totally.
With kindness.
I mean,
Guru Mike Jackson.
You know what I mean? Just practice love. Totally. Man.
I mean, as like a producer, like what, like when you.
I don't talk to anyone. I'm a producer. Just talk to my agents. Nice.
Yeah, but you're a personable dude. Like,
No. I think it's really important, whether it's on a set or in a staff meeting or even something as pretentious as like the Soho House. Like, talk to everyone, know everyone's name, treat people with respect. I just think that's uniformly just being a good human being.
It's so weird that.
And you got equity in that. with people.
Yeah. I mean, even when we, yeah, I mean, you know, so Mike and I met at Red Rocks, right, when we were doing the Series Fest, and John Legend was performing at Red Rocks, and I was doing stand-up before Whitney Cummings, who'd been before John. And by the way, like, that was it was a cool experience, but like stand-up versus, everybody was there like, we want John Legend, and here's a Jewish guy. Some dick jokes. And everyone's like, what? Where's John?
Right.
I almost started singing All of Me just to give them a little
taste. And it was pouring that night.
And it was pouring rain.
Pouring rain.
But like, you know, and when we met, it was like, and once... and you introduced yourself and I saw you with John and everything. I kind of like...
We met through Whit though, right?
We met through Whitney, yeah.
Yeah.
But then like once, and it was like really dope to me that like, oh, like, you know, you were there like with John, that was, and he was kind of, you know, prepping, warming up and doing his thing, but like you were still on about like just chumming it up with people, and like when you and I started chumming up, I was like, oh, that's so dope that like, you know, you guys are here in a big capacity, but you still like...
He was just trying to get cocaine and hookers out of you.
Well, hey, man, he got it because I delivered that night.
I mean,
it was a fucking great night.
I'm just saying.
Red Rocks for nothing.
You know what I think about? I think about that night, though. It's funny that night because I've seen John perform a trillion
times. So many
times,
yeah.
But that was right around the time of the shootings in Charleston.
Mm. Oh.
And, you know, John grew up with, you know, in a religious family and going to church. Right. And, like, his grandparents always taught him, like, growing up, like, they worked at the church. They're like, you know, always have your door open. Mm-hmm. Always let people in. Always be of service, mm-hmm. which is what those folks at Charleston did that night.
Yeah.
And I remember when he was performing, he was doing What's Going On.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he just started bawling. And I don't know if you remember, but like he stopped singing and just kept playing the piano, but his back was to us. And I was like, what the fuck is he doing? I guess he's really in the moment. I didn't know what was going on. And like afterwards, I found out. And it's like, I always will think about that night at Red Rocks and his tears in Charleston.
Yeah. Yeah, that was powerful. Because, I mean, that's those moments, too, just like musically. I mean, he seems like he's always locked in and to his performance. But it's like
he made Captain Kirk cry at the Oscars. He made Captain Kirk cry.
I was there that night.
Oh, my God.
And the kid really... has a strong command of the English language.
Yeah. No kidding.
But he's a truly compassionate dude who, you know, we do a lot of great stuff in the community, and he, like, literally runs to the fire.
How did you guys even meet and be and start Get Lifted and just become pals? And, I mean, is it a pal thing first and then business?
Yeah, so Ty Stoklorius, who's his manager, our partner at our company, Get Lifted, Filmco, plug. Ty and I were friends since elementary school back in Philadelphia. She went to Penn with John, and... right when he graduated, also like Alice's sister at the age of 20 from UPenn, started at 16.
Yeah, so John's a smart dude.
Moron. like the smartest kid in the room.
Yeah.
Time. Basically, he was just a kid who played piano and was trying to find gigs. And at that point in time, I was like a guy who could help you do that. So Ty introduced us. I had him sing for me at a restaurant while I was on a date.
Wow.
What did you have him sing?
We can't even remember. It was like a Stevie Wonder song. I just know I got laid that night.
You think? I mean, even though he's not cool. Like, he's not John Legend, but he's still the voice and the talent's there. So, I mean, come on, man.
But, you know, that was our introduction. And from that point forward, I knew nothing about the music business. And I decided I wanted to be a music manager.
Wow.
And I called a friend who was a lawyer, entertainment lawyer, and we signed John Legend. And I was his first manager.
Wow.
Based on him singing in a restaurant, you were like, I got to.
Well, what happened after?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. He sang the pants off a woman.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, literally, I was like, this boy can sing.
That's a talent. If he sings and then panties drop, like, that's like.
I've never left his side ever since.
He's a great wingman.
I have recordings of him if I need it.
It's like, I wasn't too familiar with his music. Like, literally, all I knew is that he was dating at the time Chrissy Teigen. I'm like, why does he get Chrissy Teigen?
What does he do?
What the fuck? And then I heard his song. I was like, that's
my move now. But I'm
that's why.
I'm like 8 months single, so my move now is like, have you heard the new John Legend album? Oh, you haven't.
Oh, yeah,
it's not out yet.
Oh no!
What a power move.
Let's just go get some vino.
There you go.
I'm not that guy.
No. And you were telling me, I think, at Red Rocks that Oprah day. Because I think that's when I remember first seeing, I watch Oprah. And John was on, right? That was kind of like a big intro when he performed Ordinary People.
I don't know about that.
That wasn't like his intro to the world, but that was like a big.
I don't remember. His first big televised thing, I believe, was Ellen.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I remember that was like a big deal.
Well, Ellen, Oprah, people get those easily mistaken. Yeah,
you talking about Dory? I'm talking about Dory.
I just saw that with my
eyes. I don't know if I can tell this story.
You can.
You have to tell it now. I mean,
you can. We can always cut it out if you want to.
It's an Oprah story.
Yeah. Okay.
We don't have enough Oprah stories on this podcast.
No.
I'm not here.
Apparently, someone that was in our camp, like a assistant level person, took a call from Oprah's office about John performing at a private gig or something, and they basically tried to leverage his performance with an appearance on her show. Which is inappropriate when your first album and Oprah calls.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Basically, one day he found out that Quincy Jones was going to give him a buzz, and he was like, "Oh yeah, I've made it! Like Quincy Jones is calling me." And like he gets the call, he's like, "Hey, Mr. Jones," and he goes, "Shut up and listen, kid. No one talks Oprah like that." And John like had no idea what was going on, and then found out, and then literally flew from like Europe to like Oprah's private residence to do this gig for her.
Whoa.
But she gave him like this awesome watch, and she's literally been like one of our biggest allies since that day.
Wow.
She has the Midas touch.
Yeah.
She's Oprah.
That's all you have to say. She's Oprah.
What was her place like?
I didn't go.
Okay.
She has like some ranch out here in Santa Barbara.
Yeah. Yeah.
She
does Montecito. Like, yeah.
She does like every
not
year.
Not that I hang out there outside the gate.
I drive by it every night.
I just go, Oprah! God, come on, help the dwarf out!
We need to shoot you out of a cannon over the fence.
Raise us up, Oprah! Raise us up!
She's the best.
Dwarf lives matter.
Dwarf lives matter. Dwarf lives matter.
That's season three of Dwarf's Lives Matter.
That's awesome.
So then with Underground then, so then does that come to you or to John or?
So Underground was a unique situation because it was something that Joe and Misha had already, they wrote it before any producers were on.
Yeah.
They just went and did the work. And they initially went to a guy named Akiva Goldsman, who's like an Academy Award winner.
Just a small thing.
Yeah, look at his IMDb page.
Yeah, he's ridiculous.
And
he's
Akiva and his partners.
Is it the guy from Selma, I want to say?
No.
Okay,
A Beautiful Mind.
Oh, shit.
He wrote it.
Okay.
That reaction right there?
Yeah, done.
But he's producing Transformers right now. He's like a whale.
It's another small movie.
His shape, yeah, anything just good? His stature. Yeah. But they went to Akiva and his partners, Joby and Tori, and they actually were the team that set up the show.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. And then we came on soon afterwards. And I knew Aldis.
And who did you call?
I knew Aldis.
How'd you guys know each other?
Yeah.
It's Black Hollywood.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
It is.
Bad night in a strip club.
No.
That's how the best of friendships started, man.
I don't. No. We have a mutual friend.
Yeah.
Mutual friends, actually.
Yeah. But this is way before.
Yeah, we've known each other before.
Shout out to that mutual friend, Jaleel White. Let's just say his name right here.
Friend of the podcast.
Urkel is the man. Urkel is the man.
Yeah.
I think I have him a call, actually.
Yeah.
When you and John started to get lifted, did you have a meeting about like what type of shows we want to attach ourselves to?
No, you know, and it wasn't even about attaching ourselves to shows. Really, it was really about having a voice and using the platform. And,
yeah.
You know, we launched Get Lifted pre All of Me, pre Oscar. So as much stature as John has now, he was definitely like a known dude.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like we were preparing for now then because we believed in what was coming. Now, no one saw the Oscar coming, but we believed in the work he was doing for the album. Mm. And we know what kind of man he is as a human being he is. So we knew his perspective on things were a little more elevated than a lot of other people in his position.
Sure.
So the whole idea of Get Lifted was that was the name of the first album. And, you know, we just wanted to develop content that had a story and that shone a light on brown and black in an elevated way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of other stories with brown and black folks in them, and they tell their stories their way, and there's no shade on how anyone else does it, but we had a responsibility to do it our way. But outside of that, there wasn't like a real mandate. Yeah. You know, like we'll do play. We have a play right now. We'll do.
You guys
have
Neil Brennan show.
We do Neil Brennan's play. We have another play right now, starring Joe Morton, called "Turn Me Loose."
Nice.
You guys got a
Gregory.
You guys got a movie, Southside.
Southside with You is a movie we have.
Southside with You. Which is the story of Barack and Michelle Obama's first date.
First date on the South Side of Chicago.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
And I remember. Yeah.
Where'd they go? Buca de Beppo.
They did. So you read the script. No, I'm kidding. So
Adam's eyes got so big. Like,
tell me,
what?
Jesus.
If I could become president if I just take a girl to Buca de Beppo?
But I met Obama. I met him a couple times. And
couple times.
One of the times.
Just going to drop that.
Yeah, he was, let me pick that up real quick.
Yeah.
The most powerful man in the front. Well,
tomato, tomato.
And he goes, so I hear you guys made a movie about me. And he goes, no one asked me if they can make a movie about me.
Nice.
And he goes, it was right after Sundance. He goes, yeah. But I hear the people like the movie. And I was like, well, yes, Mr. President, we can get you a copy, sir. And he goes, I think I like that, Michael. Can you please get me a copy of Southside with you? Because the critics really seem to like it. And I was like, yes, sir, Mr. President. Still hasn't gotten a copy.
Has he reached out? Has he emailed you?
Is that why Secret Service is listening to this as we speak?
You know he's got a finger on the button, right? Yeah. Like, he can just be like,
Let's be clear about one thing. No emails from the president will ever make it to me. So
that's okay. What is that even like, being in the president's presence?
It's pretty fucking cool. Unbelievable. Yeah, it's surreal. Right. And we just met Hillary. We've met her a bunch, but we just were with her a couple weeks ago at the Greek. It's a privilege. It's an honor.
On her being the next president. We just met Hillary.
For sure.
The next one.
No, so. Yes, that's happening.
Whatever, you know, back-to-back presidents. Yeah. You know, it's cool. But her son-in-law, Mark, went to school with Ty, my partner, myself, back in Philly.
Okay.
So we have, you know, whatever.
Now, how did you find this Obama story? Like, the first day, like, how does that, I mean, it's already
so
like.
So this guy named Richard Tanney
had
been developing the script. And finished it. And then Tika Sumter, who plays Michelle, is a friend. And she shared the script with me, quite frankly. And at the time, we actually didn't collectively, both sides decide to work together. They went off and made their movie. I was pissed that we didn't jump on.
Mm-hmm.
But again, friends, Tika's a friend. Bob Title, who's the producer, is a friend. And I just started tracking it. And I asked her to go to lunch with me one day. And I said, you should meet me for lunch. And I just told her that I really would love to see it. And is there a place for us still in the film? And she said, well, you guys can come in and be executive producers and really kind of like help us finish it out, help us go for the run. We did an original song. I take credit for everything John does. I'm like, we wrote an original song. I mean,
which was just me going, hey, John, and your song.
Send on the email.
More G chords.
But the funny thing about the song was, it was, we wanted him to write a ballad. We wanted him to write, you know, we all know what happens with Barack, the president and the first lady.
Yeah,
but
sure.
It's still a movie about a first date.
Mm.
And it's a movie about like hope and like, do I take that leap of faith with this person?
Sure.
And that's a question you can ask after a first date, because you can get a sense of a person.
Hell
it's a
real
real moment.
How many push-ups did Tika do before having to play Michelle Obama?
Only like 1,036.
Because those arms had to be like,
I mean,
you can't be playing Michelle Obama with like sad
Tika's
arms.
In shape. Tika's in shape.
There you go.
She's in shape.
Good.
But the song, so John kind of knew what we needed him to do, and literally like we had the conversation like Monday morning, and I was in New York, and by like Monday evening, he had sent me power ballad on a piano.
He's the king of ballads.
Can you sing a piece? Can you sing something?
Let me I need some tea.
Can we get some tea? John, stop writing a next hit. Get the man some chamomile.
You love when he serves me tea.
What is his, I guess if you're just that locked in, like, I mean, he just sits.
He actually was on a commercial shoot. He wasn't even trying to write the song.
Oh,
and he had time down, and they were in the studio, and there was a piano there.
Multi-talented.
And he'd been thinking about it, and he just kind of went to the sound engineer. He goes, you know, hit record.
Now, does he know it's a hit when he's doing it, or does he send it to you and go, yo, I mean, you know my shit, like what's...
Well, let's be clear. If he sends me things to tell him if they're hits or not, is his barometer, big trouble for him. But he knew it was a special song, and you know, he sent it to Ty and I, and I literally had tears coming down my eyes after I heard it.
You cry?
Sometimes.
Okay.
On occasion.
I know that now.
Only when Brad gets dunked in puddles.
during my death scene. It's like, man, I didn't know a dwarf white slave owner dying would affect me this much.
It's so emotional.
It's actually sad. You see the little bubbles start going smaller and smaller as the...
He was such a good man.
Yeah. Like, he cared about a slave owner. He was adorable, man. He was cute.
But, you know, kill Whitey nonetheless. I kid. I'm from a white Jewish suburb. I love white people.
Now, will there be a like a Kim Kanye follow-up first date movie? Or
Yeah. We're working on that right now. It's going to be epic.
Or maybe
it's a Kanye
Rashad, Ahmad Rashad first date.
Yeah, well, I had to. I'm not going to make Kim Kanye jokes. They're okay. Way too close to John and Chrissy. Yeah. I saw them at a barbecue 2 weeks ago. I'm just going to keep.
I bet they're dope people.
I don't know them that well.
Yeah.
I don't really, but I've been around Kanye a bunch of times, and he actually is a really cool, smart guy.
I subscribe to the fact that you can't judge people based on, you need to have your own face-to-face encounters with people.
Yeah,
you
have to.
And because somebody, how many stories have you heard of somebody, an extra on a movie who's like, or seeing somebody in an airport, like, I met Julia Roberts at the airport, and she was such a cunt.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
I yelled at her for a picture when she was boarding the plane, and she didn't even turn around.
You're right. Like, no, man, okay. I heard a lot of things about you. I heard you were an absolute dick, a tool, and I was like, this guy's actually cool.
Adam is
fist bump.
Actually, you know what? I do have a cool Julia Roberts. Go ahead.
I just want to say one thing about, Kanye, though. Just one thing about Kanye.
Put a pin in that.
And I think this most people, like, if you are in a controlled environment with someone, mm-hmm. like in a group of three or four, actually get to, like, see the humanity in someone. I mean, and forget celebrity for a second. It's just humans. Like,
assess on that, man.
He's just a dude.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. With a talent.
Yes. But you put all these cameras and lights and questions.
You're going to change.
Like,
it's going to affect you.
Yeah.
But my experience with him has always been, and again, we're not like close at all.
Sure.
It's always been super cool.
Social settings. You see him, you talk to him, and it's like, okay.
You know, we don't run and hug each other, but when I
see Mike in public, you know, he walks across the street. He doesn't acknowledge me. And I get
son
it.
Of a bitch,
it's
Mike.
Producer mentality.
You know, I get it.
Well,
Mike,
I mean,
cool. I don't want to tell you what happens in season two.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, you know?
I know.
You know, I don't know yet.
That's dope.
Do you want to know, or do you just want
to
find out?
Yeah, I have to know so I can figure out what I'm getting into.
Well, no, do you want to know, when you get the script, or do you want it, some advanced knowledge?
No, I want advanced, so I can know what I'm... Last year was a rough...
The weird thing is you're the only one that doesn't know what happened.
I know. I'm like, why am I the only one? Literally, I've been asking for months.
I mean...
Just the male lead of the show.
I mean, he sent me an email with what happens and what happens on the podcast.
Okay.
But
Brad has that's how you know Bible. That you're going to be on the... Okay,
yeah, exactly.
This puddle thing ain't a joke.
No, it's not. Episode 7 is going to be fun. That's what I'm saying. Episode 7.
I think I heard, read or heard you say that, like, your first scene of doing last season was you begging to not be...
Beat, yeah.
Right. That was the first thing you did.
It was like, it was my first scene I shot, and that was probably the roughest, because when I read the script, I specifically picked that one. I said, this is going to be the hardest one for me. That's how you start.
Why the hardest? I mean,
well, because I'm a very proud man.
Yeah.
I try not to be, not in the sense of being conceited, but I am proud of who I am, what I do, and what I know. Mm-hmm. And I would like to think that pride would spill over to looking in the face of danger or ignorance. So, when I'm on set and I'm thinking that there was a time where these people had to go through this on a regular basis, the quality of life was so terrible, and that's what they had to get used to. They had to wake up thinking I'm going to get beat or you know, worse.
Yeah.
And in this situation where he's groveling for his life, he has to pick the less of two evils.
Yeah.
And that was normal. So my pride says, I would like to think that I'm the guy that says, screw you, kill me. I don't care. Mm-hmm. But he has to say, oh, you know, please, you know, just beat me. You know, don't hang me. Don't burn me. Just beat me. And I'll take that. You know, pretty much basically is what's going on here. And to think that was morally okay to some people at some point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That really bothered me. But the thing that got me through was the fact that this character was playing a game. He knew what he was doing, and he was strong enough to take that beating, and that beating proved his strength. You know, that beating proved his mental supremacy, because he was saying, you can hit me all you want, you will never break me, and I'm always going to be stronger than you, smarter than you think, smarter than you ever want me to be, and I'm just going to bide my time and wait for the right moment, because I'm playing chess. I'm putting you in a position. So he was, in that moment, taking the beating. He was taking his power. And mm-hmm. that's what I had to key into. But it was still rough, because this is what they had to go through. And this was real. And still in today's time, some people still think that way and think it's okay.
Yeah, that guy running for office in Tennessee, whose billboard that we read.
Billboard.
Rick. Yeah, Rick something. We'll go back to the podcast. Rick, make America white again, you son of a bitch.
I'm real curious, with all the acting jobs you've had, like obviously like getting beat, you hadn't gotten beaten in anything before, right? I mean, that was...
Let me see.
In those circumstances.
I've been killed. I've been shot.
Yeah.
I played an enslaved person before. Okay. Have I been beat before? No, not
but
like that.
But like the circumstance of that scene.
No,
like,
yeah, I haven't played that out.
Obviously, like you prepare, you do your work for what you're about to do, but like can you really, do you kind of just give yourself over the moment? Like does stuff happen that you just, obviously that you can't prepare how you're going to.
Yeah, you just, you go into it, you cannot judge the scene or the material. I mean, once you've agreed to it, you take it at face value. And it's just like if you're playing a villain, you can't judge the villain and say he's making a wrong decision. You just have to say he's making his choice.
Right. You have to figure out why he's doing that. He's not doing it just to be a dick. He's doing it because he has some sort of moral thing where he thinks this is right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're playing out the analytics physically. You know, we are taking the audience through that process of why X, Y, and Z may happen. So I don't judge it. I go through it and I just let it happen and let myself try to be as honest to the nature of it as possible, because that is us to a degree as artists paying homage and tribute to this beautiful culture of people that we're representing here, because we have to represent their strength and give them dignity in the best way possible. So finding ways to do that is going to be the constant challenge. And, you know, as long as we keep getting that opportunity, I'm cool. But sometimes it gets a little rough.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when they call cut, I mean, is it like.
When they call cut, it's cool. Cause like the cast that we got working around us, you know, in that scene specifically, I'm working with, there's Reed Diamond who plays Tom Macon. There's Alana Miller who plays Cato. And then there's PJ Marshall who plays Bill Meeks. He is the, you know, slave driver.
Sure.
And he's the roughest one to me in the scene, you know, grabbing me and manhandling me, all that. But when they call cut, you know, he's sitting there like, man, are you okay? Are you good? And I'm like, bro, we're okay. Don't worry about it. He's like, I'm sorry. I'm like, it's cool. You
know? Cause,
he's gracious.
Yeah. And he's not that guy. And to get to that level where the same way you had to look at the script and be like, okay, how can I be okay with what my character is doing right here? And he's got to find some perspective. He's got to find something that makes you go, okay, what would make me want to actually do this to this guy?
Yeah. But there are those moments like in episode one where Journey,
and Journey had a moment. Yeah.
And they said cut and she was
still in it. You know, there are those moments where you can't get out of it, because when you're going through the motions, you realize the pain that is still... The pain that sort of resounds in today's society and how close to it we are. And it does hurt.
Oh, I'm sure that when you guys are playing those scenes, that unfortunately you can probably tap into some memory that's happened in your past where it's maybe not the exact same thing, obviously, but it's somewhere along those lines where you felt that kind of hatred before. You felt that sort of prejudice.
I grew up in between New York and Jersey, where I was living in Jersey. They had the KKK. So, I know about that. Most people don't realize that the KKK had a stronghold establishment in the East Coast and in Jersey.
And in Jersey?
Yeah.
And skinheads.
Yeah.
No kidding.
So, huge in the Northeastern.
I grew up, I almost put a kid in the hospital for calling me, you know, the N-word in school. They tried to expel me. It was going to arrest me. But I was like, look, I'm doing what I know to do.
Isn't that like a viable defense of like, well, he beat him within an inch of his life? Your Honor, he said the N-word. Oh,
yeah.
It's
viable. It's viable.
Yeah, that's cool.
It depends on who the judge is.
Exactly.
Yeah,
apparently, you know, if you go to Stanford, you're okay.
You can do whatever you want.
That pisses me off so much.
In the last few minutes we got here, which, by the way, thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having us.
You guys are the shit. I want to know who, like, your... producing wise and like acting wise, just coming up, who you guys either have met and developed relationships and gotten mentors, or people that just before you even started you looked up to and you wanted to try to like model your you know, your life or career after what they did.
Mike,
you know, through working on Underground, actually Akiva has become someone that I really admire, and he's very accessible. I pick up the phone and call him and ask him questions. I'll meet him for lunch. We're actually developing a project together, which is fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. So he's not someone that I looked to prior to Underground, mm-hmm. other than I know his work and I respect his work. But yeah. he's someone who I look to as like, you know, he's a guy who has my best interests at heart. He's a, you know, another fellow producer. And you know, and there's also another person in this business who I look up to in a significant way.
Aldous Hodge.
Other than Al.
Oprah.
Other than the Big O. Yes. And she's not a producer.
Back
she's not
Jules.
An actor. She's not a director. She's an attorney.
Really?
But her name is Nina Shaw.
Huh.
And she has just become like everything to me as far as like how to navigate these mean streets of Hollywood.
Yeah.
Well, and like you said before, when you find people that don't look at you as this is a person who can get me something or mm-hmm. who is that walking ATM, that's got to be refreshing. And you got to like, okay, I'm going to hold on to these relationships.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So people that have seen it before, lived it before, you know, that point of reference, like, yeah, I've seen this and this is what's going to happen. This is what mm-hmm. you need to worry about. Cause I think, you know, just again in life, like you have to have people around you because mm-hmm. life is tough. This business is tough and you have to look to your left, look to your right and hope that there's people there that just help you get through it, man.
Yeah.
It's not and even like about putting a smile on your face as much as like, let's just get through this shit.
Yeah. And then when Adam looks to his left, looks to his right, then looks down because that's where I am.
Yeah. Exactly. That's where I get my perspective.
Yeah. Exactly. Hey.
Yeah. I mean, Akiva's definitely that guy, you know, he's kind of like, you know, the oracle when he steps on set, you know what I'm saying? But he's very welcoming. Mm-hmm. I think another person I would say that I do admire and look up to in terms of mentorship is my old boss, co-creator of Leverage, John Rogers.
Okay.
He kind of represents where I see myself in a few years, being a showrunner, giving good jobs, to giving good fair jobs. He gave me my shot on Leverage because it was the fair thing to do, even though they, you know, network wanted to go with somebody else who was more famous. He was like, mm-hmm. this kid is the right person for the job. So he stepped out and went out on a limb for me, you know, and that's what happened. So I want to be able to do that for somebody else and make it a fair game.
Awesome, man. You're going to be running shows, huh?
Yeah. Can we point out for a second that you are wearing a Reading Rainbow shirt?
We can. I mean, we can, yeah. But the listeners of this podcast, all three of them, including two of your dicks,
yes.
if they listen to this podcast, they'll know that that's not outside of Adam. Okay. That's
no,
the,
I mean,
that's
I respect
unusual.
It. I haven't seen it in a while.
I think I've got maybe 2 more years to wear this, you know, maybe.
I haven't seen it. I was
until you're like, until you're like 70 and it goes all the way around.
Yeah. Bar Burton spoke to my graduating class at USC.
You did graduate.
Yeah.
He graduated.
Okay.
But it was amazing. He smacked himself with a knife. And told us, he goes, there's a lot of, he goes,
that sounds like attempted suicide.
Well, he was amazing. He goes, in life, you're going to know there's 2 ways to look at things. He goes, like this knife, is it a weapon or a tool? It's and then he started smacking weapon. Himself in the forehead with it and cut himself. And I raised my hand. I was like, LeVar, man, I think that's a weapon, dude. You're fucking bleeding. Yeah. And he was like, but see, there's 2 ways to look at that. And I was like,
no,
you're down.
No,
you cut yourself.
You could die. Okay.
Don't hit a vein, LeVar.
Wait, yeah. What is your Julia Roberts story?
Oh,
you poked up when you mentioned that.
No, it's pretty cool, man. I was at this. I was at a little industry party or whatever, right? At someone's house, and me and my boy.
You
said what?
we could say whose house it was. Pee Wee Herman's.
Pee Wee Herman's. Pee-wee Herman's. Right. So
that party. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I heard about that. I read your blogs.
So there's me and my boy Neil Brown Jr. who played DJ Yella in Compton. Yeah. Right, we're sitting there kicking it. And, you know, we were walking around. There's a dance floor. We go over there. We're like, okay, cool. So we start walking away from the dance floor. Here comes Julia walking up. She's about to pass us. Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh, shit. You know, it's Julia Roberts. Yeah. She stops us. She's like, hey, we're trying to get all the cool people to the dance floor. Where are you going? We're like, we were going to go back. She's like, no, y'all got to dance. Because so we're like, okay, well, I mean, Julia says you got to dance.
You got to dance.
Yeah, so, you know, we go out there and we cut a little two-step with Julia. And I was like,
two-step with Julia.
This is weird, but this is so cool.
Yeah, dude.
How's her moves on the dance floor?
She got moves, man. She got moves. You know, dirty dancing too. Julia Roberts. Yeah. Yeah, I gotta say this is kind of crazy. It's nostalgic for me being here because when I was a kid, like I started doing stand up when I was 11. And I started hosting here at the Improv when
no
I was 13.
Shit. No,
and I held
kidding?
The room here from 13 to like 17, 18. Yeah,
and that was the last time you
told a joke.
Pretty much, yes. The last time I told a joke.
I didn't know you did stand up. That's nuts.
Yeah, man.
Wait, and you, Brad, told me you were on Mad TV at some point.
Was I? Yes. I think not as like a real cast member.
Yeah,
or
Adam's
like
on the new Matt TV.
Yeah, he's
really
the new one.
Yeah, yeah. Dope. I think I did like a snippet, but my brother and I, when we were kids, we were, they did this, had this little resident kid pack they used on SNL.
Oh, yeah.
And we did the circulation for about 2 years.
That's
on SNL.
So like what sketches do you want to be in it? Do you?
I can't even remember the sketches, man. But like, all I remember is like Adam Sandler and Chris Farley.
Damn.
Yeah.
So if you got, so if we go back and see some of those, like whenever there's kids in the background, might, yeah, kids in the
put together a reel of your background. Work
exactly.
Do you even remember being in the presence of Farley and Sandler? Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that because they were cool people, man. I remember I was taking this picture one time with Adam Sandler, and right before they snapped, he picked me up, held me upside down. So as you see me getting snapped, it's like me upside down. This is awesome. But yeah, I mean, me and my brother, we go back, man. We even did Sesame Street for 2 years, and that's a wild ride.
We need to have you back, we need those stories.
Continue,
I'm coming back,
man.
I'm coming back.
Yeah, buddy.
Wow. I want to get into your stand-up stuff, too, when you come back. That's nuts.
I mean, no longer funny, but yeah, we can talk about it.
Not with that attitude, man.
I'm just saying. We can talk about it.
You got timing.
He's funny.
So you haven't been back, so you haven't even been back here since then, or?
No. I mean, like.
To see shows?
To see a show? No.
Damn, dude.
He's a Laugh Factory guy, actually.
Okay. I did. Was it Laugh Factory? No, it was a Ha Ha. The last time I performed.
Ha Ha Cafe.
Ha Ha. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm here in the factory tonight if you guys want to come out.
Dig it, man.
I got to go
see The Purge, of which my brother is starring in.
Purge election
year. You work
tonight? Yeah, I'm going to hit my audition after this and then go hit The Purge right after that.
Okay.
That's amazing. But yeah,
I'll go to a fancy event tonight.
Excuse me.
Black Tie. Oprah?
Oh, no, the Paley thing.
No, it's Friday.
Okay.
This is like some...
Oprah?
It doesn't matter.
It's Oprah.
It's totally Oprah.
It's the Oprah guy. Underground is coming back.
Yeah, season two.
Season two. So catch up on all the episodes.
Do we have a premiere day yet?
Not yet.
But it will be
spring-ish 2017.
Okay. 2017. They don't tell the actors.
Beyond WGN America.
All this dies.
Yes.
Thanks.
There it is.
Brad takes over.
Breaking news.
You got to try to see if nobody notices.
It'll be on deadline in an hour.
I'm going to play one of the dicks.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.